This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This week, we're covering several crimes reported over the holidays. We're also diving into the recent Bondi Beach attack, as well as a concerning rise in anti-Semitism here in the United States. Lastly, we're going to give an update on the Brown University shooting. First up, a roundup of crimes from the holidays. We'll start with three officer-involved cases. In Delaware, Odyssey Station KYW News Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, reported on a fatal shooting that took place at a DMV the day before Christmas Eve.
We are learning more about Corporal Grade 1 Matthew T. Snook of the Delaware State Police, who was killed in the line of duty Tuesday at a Wilmington area DMV. Here's KYW's John McDevitt.
Delaware State Police identified the trooper as 34-year-old Corporal Grade 1 Matthew T. or Ty Snook from Hockessin, Delaware. Corporal Snook was a 10-year veteran of the Delaware State Police. He is survived by his wife and their 1-year-old daughter. A Help a Hero Fund has been established to help support his family. Funeral arrangements are pending. It was around 2 p.m. when officials say a 44-year-old man walked into the DMV and shot Corporal Snook, who was sitting at a reception desk. Authorities say even after being shot, the trooper pushed a DMV employee out of harm's way, and the corporal was shot a second time by the gunman. A responding police officer shot the suspect. Both the trooper and the suspect were transported to the hospital, where they were pronounced dead. The suspected gunman's identity has yet to be released.
Here's KYW's Nigel Thompson with more on the Delaware shooting.
Officials with the Delaware State Police and Delaware Governor Matt Meyer described a chaotic scene that played out around 2 p.m. Tuesday afternoon as a 44-year-old man first entered the DMV south of Wilmington on Hessler Boulevard, just off Route 13 and I-95, as a customer.
A short time later, the suspect approached a trooper who was working an overtime assignment sitting at the reception desk and shot him.
Delaware State Police spokesman Corporal Rashawn Rich says the trooper, after being shot, moved a DMV employee out of harm's way.
And the suspect shot the trooper again.
Multiple law enforcement agencies responded to the DMV, and authorities say a Newcastle County police officer later confronted the suspected gunman and shot him. Both the state trooper and suspected gunman later died at the hospital from their injuries. Delaware Governor Matt Meyer honored the state trooper's final act to save a life instead of his own.
There are Delawareans who are alive tonight because of his heroism. Lauren and I join with Delawareans up and down our state, praying for the family and every state trooper as they grieve this sudden and unimaginable loss.
Next, we'll go to 1010 Winds in New York with coverage of another officer-involved shooting.
A probe from the Attorney General's office into the death of Chez Frey, 29, who was fatally shot during an encounter with the NYPD in Far Rockaway this past weekend. Cops say they responded to a 911 call for a domestic dispute in an apartment building. That's where they encountered Frey holding a box cutter. The two female officers ordered him to drop the weapon, but he refused to comply and moved towards them. One cop fired her stun gun. Moments later, the second officer fired her service weapon, striking him once in the chest. Frey was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. His father disputes the NYPD's story and called on the Attorney General to launch an investigation, which in a case like this was already going to happen anyway.
And now to WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities with the third officer-involved case.
The man accused in the weekend shooting death of a 19-year-old in Frazee reportedly says he pulled the trigger in what's being described as a robbery gone wrong.
Court documents show 21-year-old Arthur Campbell told police he was intoxicated early Saturday morning when he and a juvenile demanded money and a pair of basketball shoes from 19-year-old Bryson May at his home in Frazee. May died of multiple gunshot wounds at a local hospital. Campbell says he was trying to shoot May in the legs to prevent him from chasing them. He has his first court appearance today in Detroit Lakes. The juvenile who was named in the court documents remains in a juvenile detention center. Two others who were arrested after the shooting are no longer in custody.
These weren't the only crimes reported over the holiday week. WWJ's Luke Sloan reported live from the scene of a shooting in Detroit on Christmas Eve. Miraculously, the victims are expected to survive.
Chris, good morning. The shooting happening around 3:30 this morning on Binder Street near Outer Drive and 7 Mile here on the city's east side. Now, an unknown suspect allegedly hopped out of an unknown vehicle, spraying a home with bullets, injuring a 1-year-old baby girl who was shot in her leg and a 24-year-old woman who was shot in her hand. Now, the woman and the baby were able to escape to a home on nearby Concord Street, and they are okay. They're both at the hospital in stable condition and are expected to survive. But at this time, there are no suspects in custody, no suspect description or vehicle description, and no motive behind this shooting. The investigation here on scene wrapping up, but Detroit police want you to give them a call if you have any information about the suspects or multiple suspects in this case.
Just before the holidays, a mother and daughter were found dead inside of a burning home. Then, St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer issued a statement in response to the deaths. She said they were being investigated as a potential homicide. KMOX News in St. Louis reported.
It reads, quote, "My heart is with the families and loved ones of all lost to violence this year, especially today as we grieve the loss of a mother and her young child in their own home as they prepared for the holiday season. SLMPD homicide detectives are currently working around the clock to hold whomever did this fully accountable. If you know anything, even the smallest thing about this incident or any other homicide in our city, please tell police as soon as possible. Please help provide some justice for this beautiful family and all families in our community impacted by heinous violence." Brad Choate, KMOX News.
Police have identified the victims as 45-year-old Latasha Brown and 9-year-old Paige Buckner.
And in Dallas, Texas, KRLD reported on high school football turning deadly.
They just won a state championship. Now a football player at South Oak Cliff behind bars is accused of shooting a teammate.
18-year-old Xavier Mayfield was arrested after police say he shot his teammate in the neck while playing with a gun. Mayfield told police he thought the safety was on the rifle he was holding, and while looking at pictures from the state championship game earlier that day, he swung the rifle around and pointed it at his teammate. He says that's when it went off. Mayfield also told police he initially tried to take the victim to the hospital but realized he was bleeding too much, so he called 911. He's been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. South Oak Cliff won the 5A Division II state championship when they beat Richmond Randall 35-19. It was their fifth straight appearance in the title game.
And now we'll move on to the Bondi Beach attack and an increase in anti-Semitism in the U.S. Here, a record high total of hate crimes against Jewish people was recorded in 2024. And that was after former FBI Director Christopher Wray previously warned about an increase in anti-Semitism back in 2023. When the updated numbers came out this summer, community groups like the Jewish Federations of North America stressed the importance of protecting Jewish people and Jewish communities. Still, concerning news about anti-Semitic incidents continues to pile up. For example, a recent report out of KYW in Philadelphia.
The principal of Lower Gwinnett Elementary School in Ambler, Montgomery County, has been fired after he was heard on a voicemail making anti-Semitic remarks. The Wissahickon School Board voted to remove Philip Letty from his role. The superintendent recommended to the board to fire Letty, describing his comments as anti-Semitic and fundamentally contrary to the district's values. Former Lower Gwinnett principal Sue Konopka is taking over interim duties.
Odyssey also reported in December on a group of students who allegedly made a video of themselves forming a swastika on a high school football field in San Jose, California. The video went viral online.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
While it didn't occur on American soil, one of the most disturbing anti-Semitic incidents to make headlines recently was the Bondi Beach terrorist attack in Australia. It occurred on December 14th. Here's WBEN Radio in Buffalo, New York, reporting on the massacre on December 16th.
Well, police in Sydney, Australia are continuing their investigation into Sunday's anti-Semitic terrorist attack at a Hanukkah festival at the city's Bondi Beach that left at least 15 dead. Australian Federal Police Commissioner Chrissy Barrett said the two suspected gunmen were a father and son inspired by the Islamic State.
There is no evidence to suggest other individuals were involved in this attack. However, we caution that this could change given it is early in our investigation.
The father was killed by police. The son remains in a hospital. Both reportedly traveled to the Philippines in the last month, a nation that has an ISIS cell.
On Christmas Day, U.S. President Donald Trump announced that the U.S. had attacked another branch of ISIS, an Islamic terrorist group that grew out of an insurgency in Iraq and Syria, according to the National Terrorism Center Counterterrorism Guide, in Nigeria, and claimed that the group was targeting Christians. Trump also pledged that ISIS would face, quote, serious retaliation after an attack that claimed the lives of U.S. service members earlier in December. The Atlantic recently also reported that, quote, extremists in the Middle East are fueling anti-Jewish violence everywhere. Let's now rewind to 2022. That's when a mass shooter opened fire in a Buffalo grocery store, murdering 10 black people. He described himself as a white supremacist and an anti-Semite in a manifesto. There, in Buffalo, the community is still dealing with the aftershocks of this tragedy. With the news of the Bondi Beach tragedy, the local community in Buffalo gathered to support each other and others amid Hanukkah celebrations, WBEN reported.
Here in Western New York, neighbors gathered in support of the Jewish community and to honor the lives lost. WBEN's Brayton Wilson has more.
Hanukkah is a special time of year for the Jewish community, but this year's holiday carries some extra weight following the anti-Semitic attack on Sunday at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia.
Our hearts are broken. We pray for the families of the deceased and for all those. There's still 40 in the hospitals and ICUs. We pray for them speedy recovery.
That's Rabbi Lazar Lobkovsky from the Center for Jewish Life. For Miriam Abramovich, CEO of the Buffalo Jewish Federation, she knows how resilient the Jewish community is and how optimistic and hopeful the people can be, even in light of another horrific anti-Semitic attack.
The story of Hanukkah itself is also about a small band of people who fought to be able to observe their faith, who fought to be able to live their lives Jewishly. And so it's a privilege to be here tonight with Jews, also with friends who are here to support us. You know, it's a joy mixed in with the sorrow of what happened yesterday.
While a number of local Jewish leaders like Rabbi Alex Lazarus Klein from Congregation Shir Shalom have received support from those outside of the Western New York congregation, including the likes of Bishop Michael Fisher and others, he says more support is always welcome.
This is a very raw time to have such a devastating attack, another attack. This is one of countless that have happened over the last several years, and anyone that reaches out to your Jewish friends and neighbors, it really matters, and it's really appreciated. So thank you, those of you that are doing that, and we hope that here in Western New York and for the rest of the holiday, that it is a safe and beautiful holiday, and we have a chance to be together with our friends and our community.
Newell Normand out of WWL in New Orleans also covered the worrisome uptick in anti-Semitic incidents with help from an expert.
Folks, this past weekend, another horrific reminder of the dangerous rise of global anti-Semitism that went on in Australia, Sydney's Bondi Beach. And here to talk to us about that is Arnie Filko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. Arnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Arnie, I mean, these instances are beginning to become more frequent. They seem to be piling one on the other in countries that typically we've not seen this type of activity either. Your thoughts?
Well, it's absolutely terrible. I mean, even our Pope, commented over the weekend that anti-Semitism has just got to stop, too much. And we're seeing it in America. We're seeing it, in this case, in Australia, other parts of the world right now. And You know, unfortunately, anti-Semitism is not new. It's been around for many centuries, and candidly, it's a downfall of a lot of civilizations. It's the beginning of, you know, the end. And we've just got to stop the rhetoric, stop the talk, stop the hate, because it's literally killing people. And I can say the Jewish community is concerned. You know, we have a lot of events this week because of Hanukkah, and, you know, obviously, and even in New Orleans, there's heavy security at those events. But, you know, the appeal has got to be to all people, stop the hate, stop the rhetoric, because words matter, and words get translated into violence and what we saw over the weekend at Bondi Beach in Australia. I mean, Australia is a very interesting Jewish community because it's the largest post-Holocaust community where people that survived the Holocaust moved to. So it has a very vibrant Jewish community there. And, you know, like everywhere else in the world right now, people are very scared. You know, and some of this relates, obviously, to what's happened in the Middle East. You know, Australia has taken a very pro-Palestinian perspective. And again, people can have different views on Gaza, and nobody wants the suffering we've seen, you know, for anybody in that region. But the reality is, when you have groups that are calling for, you know, from the river to the sea, or globalize the intifada, I mean, those kind of statements lead people, you know, to terrible acts. And, you know, in this case in Australia, you had a father and a son who had pledged, apparently, their commitment to ISIS. They had just got back from a trip to the Philippines, which I'm sure is being investigated right now. But, you know, it's just a terrible situation. How do you go on a holiday, you know, go to a beach with long guns and with the purpose of just killing innocent people? And, you know, I do have to say this, if there's any form of hope and silver lining in anything, this wonderful fruit vendor, who is a Muslim man, who took it upon himself to take away the gun of the father, and himself got shot. That is an incredible story, a courageous story in the midst of just a horrific scene.
To wrap up this episode, we'll give a brief update on the December 13th shooting at Brown University. Two students, Ella Cook and Mohammed Aziz Umerzakov, were killed in the attack. Alleged shooter Claudio Manuel Neves Valente died by his own hand while surrounded by police on December 18th. Here's Vanita Sakar of WCCO News Talk with more.
Updates on that Brown University manhunt. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Lindsay Reiser with CBS News. Wow, it was amazing what they were able to do to track down this person who allegedly did this, Lindsay.
So we knew yesterday from our brilliant Anna Schechter, she is the coordinating producer for our Crime and Public Safety Unit. She was hearing from sources in the afternoon that things were happening, and she said by the end of the night we should have a suspect, and she was right. So the suspect was found with a self-inflicted gunshot wound in a storage unit that he had been renting in Salem, New Hampshire. Essentially, law enforcement say they got a tip. They were looking for a rental car with certain plates, but they thought that the suspect may have been changing plates from state to state, and so they were able to track the rental car. They tracked the suspect's movements, and it turns out that he has connections to two shootings that law enforcement in the region are and were investigating. So the suspect's been identified as 48-year-old Claudio Manuel Neves Valente. He was a former Brown student. Of course, you'll remember two students were killed, nine wounded in that shooting Saturday. This manhunt had entered its sixth day. Well, Valente is also believed now to be responsible for the shooting death of an MIT professor 2 days later. This is in Brookline, Massachusetts, about 50 miles away from the Brown campus in Rhode Island. And they believe that he has a connection to both because he was a Brown student briefly studying physics, where all the classes were taking place in this hall where the shooting tragically occurred. And he and his professor had attended the same university in Portugal between 1995 and 2000. So it's believed that they knew each other. Again, found dead in the storage unit. But There's so much more information about the timeline, when he entered, when he started moving around with this rental car. Also should be noted that he came to the U.S. in 2017 after getting a green card through a visa lottery program, and the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, now says that program is going to be paused.
Nuno Loureiro, a 47-year-old professor of nuclear science, engineering, and physics at MIT, was Valente's other reported victim. Providence, Rhode Island Mayor Brett Smiley has advocated for the author of a Reddit message board comment that led to the identification of Valente to get a $50,000 reward offered by the FBI. However, reports have noted that it might not happen, since Valente died and there cannot be an arrest or conviction. A similar situation has been reported regarding the tip that resulted in the arrest of Luigi Mangione, who has not yet been convicted but has been accused of killing United Health CEO Brian Thompson. WCCO's Adam and Jordana recently discussed the Valente reward issue.
So what I want to talk about today is the FBI. Stop being such cheapos. The FBI absolutely must pay the entire reward for the breakthrough in the hunt for the person who murdered two Brown students, who injured nine more, and also murdered an MIT professor. Get this. Adam, you probably know this story, but there was a man named John. He was a homeless man who lived on the Brown University campus. And he's the one who saw Claudio Manuel Nueves Valente, the gunman behind the double homicide. He's the one who saw him leaving the building. He even approached him. And he wrote down, or he noted what car he was driving with the Florida plates. He saw the suspect driving.
Yep.
He later went to a police station, identified himself, and helped the officers confirm the vehicle through surveillance. And police say this tip blew the case wide open. He also went on Reddit and said, I guess he had access to the internet and a phone somehow, even though he was a homeless person. He went on Reddit and said, this is the guy, and the FBI has to identify him. And the FBI offered a $50,000 reward for information leading to the identification, arrest, and conviction of the perp. Well, the dude killed himself before police could identify, well, or could arrest and convict him. And now the FBI is saying, there's some verbiage there that may not get John his $50,000 reward. And I am calling absolute lunacy on this. John should get $50,000 because he's the one who solved the crime, not actually the FBI or local law enforcement. Do you agree or disagree? Am I a crazy person?
No, that's... Yeah, just because the suspect took his own life... I don't think that automatically negates the reward.
Right. Of course it doesn't. It shouldn't.
Right. And he did the work that the FBI should have been doing. And I have zero problem with them giving him the full $50,000, and I think he's entitled to that. I think it's ridiculous.
That's right.
I don't understand.
That's right.
I mean, if it's that, if that's the only reason that he's not getting it is because the suspect took his own life, that's not good enough reason for me.
The identification, by the way, and that's what it said, the identification, arrest, or conviction. That's what the reward was for, leading to the identification, arrest, and conviction. At least that's the verbiage. Let me tell you, the identification was 100% successful. John didn't just provide, like, hey, I saw a guy in a gray Nissan. I think that's what it was. He gave the make, the model, the color, the license plate, the origin of the rental car. Okay, John, our homeless friend, gave the FBI and the police all of this. This, and I don't know that police had anything else to go on.
Right.
This man was a hero. He was lucid. He understood what was happening. He also understood the assignment. He went to the police and gave this information. And the fact that there's even a question of whether or not he will get the $50,000 is absolute injustice. I think they literally should have handed the man a check right there. If they want other people to help, this is a perfect incentive.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't even be giving him a hard time. I know the federal government said, oh, they put him up in a hotel and they're giving him food. Well, yeah, that's nice also because you want to protect the people who give you tips to find, to identify mass murderers. I know the guy is dead and the world is probably better for it, so he can't kill anybody else. The suspect took his own life. But my goodness, this man blew the case wide open, and there shouldn't be a, well, the verbiage, we were supposed to arrest him. It's bureaucracy at its finest, and honestly, stop being such a cheapskate, FBI. $50,000 is a sneeze. It's nothing for you. Open the checkbook, write the man some money, and let him, and say thank you very much for doing the work that we didn't do.
I wondered, I bet you this happens more often than we think, because we always hear about rewards. And who actually does the follow-up to make sure, like, the people who provide these tips get paid? And I bet you this is...
Yeah, I don't know.
I bet you I bet you this happens all the time. I think the devil is in the details.
People get screwed?
And that, that somehow on a technicality, they don't get the full reward, or they get a partial reward or whatever it is. I bet you it has happened all... I bet you it happens all the time. And I'm wondering, too, in this case... Like, if we're super sympathetic to this guy because he's homeless. And it's like, come on, give the guy a break. You know, it seems totally ridiculous to me.
We'll be keeping an eye and an ear on that case and whether the tipster, identified simply as John, ever gets that reward. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KYW News Radio out of Philadelphia, 1010 Winds in New York, WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, KMOX out of St. Louis, KRLD out of Dallas, Texas, WBEN out of Buffalo, New York, and WWL out of New Orleans. You can get these true crime updates by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.